welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Right, hello, welcome to episode 408 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and my good pal Sean Orford. How are you doing, Sean?
I'm doing stunningly well. How are you?
Yeah, I'm great. Yeah, we've finished the course. It's over, so we're kind of back to business as usual, just talking, chatting rubbish about the world and planet Earth, and trying to do our little bit to improve mental health and people's outlook on life. But yeah, it's a new world we're moving into, isn't it, as life returns to normal in the UK.
Whatever normal is. In fact, when I was writing the blog for this, it was reminding me of the course, because the course is about how do you go from where you are, get rid of all the negativity, get into the positive, now create the future. In many ways, we're doing the same thing. We've all been in this kind of lockdown phase, got COVID burnout. There's that kind of negative feeling around, and we need to shed that, get back into a positive present, and then we need to decide what we're going to do with it. So
loads to go through, really, which we'll come on to a sec. liveinthepresent.co.uk, all the show notes and links. We're on all the regular podcast outlets, Apple and Google and Spotify and a few more, I think. And we're on YouTube as well. Actually, I record these as a video now, which actually, because we might be able to start meeting up again soon, you and I, Sean, even if it's outdoors to do these face-to-face. So yeah. Might be a bit trickier to record video in that instance, but because I mean, Zoom and working online has delivered some real benefits, hasn't it? One of which is easy video recording. Before we go into the show, then, so how's life for a psychotherapist at the moment? Are you, moving into the episode, are people that you're working with, are they excited to be returning to normal and to be able to see friends and family again, or are they nervous about having to kind of readjust and relearn how we used to live?
I've got three sets of people that are around me, both professionally and personally. There are those that can't wait to get out and going to be out there doing absolutely everything as soon as they can. You know, at 1 minute past midnight, there was a tennis club that reopened under floodlights, you know, all that kind of stuff. People that got to do it. People who won't do anything for a while. People who would never fly on a plane again. People who can't imagine going anywhere without a mask on forever. You know, it's kind of changed their behaviour. And certainly if they ever get a cold, they will always wear a mask now. That kind of thing. Through to the people that are the ones that, to me, in many ways, are the funniest, which is probably will annoy people in saying that, but that's why, are the conspiracy theorists who, and I keep hearing the most wonderful stories about who it is, who's the them that is got this virus going to kind of do all bad things to us, whether it's the Chinese, the Russians, the Americans, men from outer space. You know, it's like I've had the lot. People are presented to me. And my favourite is that the vaccine has got microchips in it. They're going to control your brain. Yeah. And it'll be Microsoft that are doing it. It's Bill Gates. Yes.
Well, stranger things have happened. We'll talk a bit more about that, the type of mind that believes that stuff. And, you know, I don't want to kind of discount it completely because you never know.
You never know.
You never know. But yeah, I guess the first thing I want to kind of breach is that the question, I mean, I think the title of your blog was, "Is it over?"
It's like breakout. What have we learned from it? Is that
I guess, is it over? And the question is, I'm trying to figure a question out from that is, it's not a question, it's a statement, because it is never over, it inverted commas, because life is just full of surprises and life is always changing, isn't it? So it's not over. Is that the short answer?
yeah. And I think probably the answer is it never will be. Which kind of you know, this idea about we've been in lockdown, we've been in jail. You know, who said? Why are we in jail? Why have people developed this mindset of like, oh my God, that's it, it's so unfair. And one of the things I was saying to you earlier on, we've got Auntie V, 93, who lived through the Depression and the war and all that kind of stuff. And for people like that, what on earth are we moaning about? You know, they were locked down in a situation where they, if they were lucky, they had the radio and that was it. They didn't have any telephones or media. And at the same time, people were trying to bomb them and kill them at the same time. And here we are living in the lap of luxury with all this kind of warmth and food and all these wonderful services that we've got. And we're all moaning about it, you know. And I can understand those older Captain Tom kind of people looking at us and thinking, oh, I haven't got a clue. You know?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Proper snowflakes, aren't we? Flipping, eh? yeah, so I mean, how, yeah, are people that you're working with or you've spoken to, I guess there's a few things to be nervous about potentially. There's the one, the fact that we haven't vaccinated everyone on planet Earth, not by a long shot. So the chance for the virus to start doing its thing again and spreading, like, yeah, the thing it does best is quite real. And then there's also people that are nervous about, you know, re-engaging with society and trying to get back up to speed with all that stuff. So how are you helping people through this at the moment? Do people need help?
Well, a lot of it is about people coming to their own decisions about what's going on. And it's like, if you do what makes you feel comfortable, then you're okay, aren't you? It's a bit like, at what point will we be able to go and hug other people? You know, would you ever feel comfortable hugging other people? You know, would you shake hands with people, or would you, you know, we carry on doing the elbow forever? I tell you, one of the things that I've noticed as a change of behaviour in me is that if I sneeze or cough, I used to do it into a handkerchief on my hands, and now I automatically go into the shoulder, into the elbow.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that's something that I'm going to take away from the pandemic, is sneezing into my elbow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's certainly, I would have thought there's going to be better levels of kind of personal hygiene going forward in terms of hand washing. And I mean, I've got an habit of, I don't wear a mask, but I have like a, well, through the winter, I've had a scarf that's nude that I've just worn everywhere just to keep me warm more than anything. And obviously then I can pull it up, and I've just got a lighter one for spring and summer that, you know, won't kind of make me overheat too much. So. And it looks quite cool. So that's something that I might just have on me just to kind of regulate temperature a bit better. So yeah, that's one little thing I'd imagine. Well, the mask wearing and the face covering is going to continue for a while yet, certainly in the UK, isn't it?
Yeah. Went for a walk and saw some lads on bikes that looked really kind of funny but menacing, because they had hoodies on, but they had ski masks on. So they had the, you know, just the eyes and the mouth sticking out, you know.
Yeah.
So they had their masks on.
Like, oh. Young hoodlum.
Scary stuff.
Scary stuff, yeah, flipping heck. So, George, should we talk a little bit about the conspiracy side of things? Because, I mean, there are conspiracies about all sorts of things, and some of them I'm fascinated by, and I've watched endless kind of YouTube documentaries about the moon landing stuff, even though, you know, I do think we did go to the moon. But, you know, the 9/11 stuff is fascinating, and JFK going back a little bit further. Why do so many people, or maybe it's not that many, why do we seek out conspiracy, and why do we have like a mistrust of people in charge of the leadership?
If you think about human development, safety is about having a kind of an alertness to the negative. Now, whether that is just a generalised awareness of, is it safe to go out, what's going on, or whether it is that idea that we start to build that alertness into the conspiracy, you know, that they're out to get us. The tribe next door are trying to work out ways to steal our women and our food and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So now we become hypervigilant. And every time we see someone from the other tribe, it's the way you looked at me. You know, so we start to develop that when you're in much bigger situations like we are in the world, that all the stuff that's gone on with the EU and us, because we're no longer part of the EU, we've broken down into the us and them. And then we started arguing over viruses and vaccines and who's allowed to have what and who can sell, you know. But it's all around us and them. And the conspiracy is that someone out there is out to get us in some form. You know, what do they want from us? So for some people would tell me they want to kill us all. Quite a few people have said to me, this was a virus that was designed by the Chinese to get rid of their older population. And it's just slipped out into the world, but it's going to kill all the older people. Now, I've had that one.
Yeah.
The idea that this is our government wanting to control us. Mm. This is, you know, by making everybody wear masks, we're teaching everybody to be compliant. And that's because of what's coming next. You know, this is just a preparation for what they're going to do to us because we're going to be controlled.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't want to belittle people because there's obviously a certain chunk of the population that are quite into all this stuff. And, you know, I've seen there's been rallies, demonstrations quite recently, you know, in the UK and globally about it. So I'm not immersed in that world, so I can't claim to know everything, to understand it completely. So we shouldn't belittle it too much. And we're not, you know, so. But I guess coming on, it speaks to me about like our relationship with our fellow neighbours and how much we trust our neighbours and the people that, you know, we're supposed to be our fellow citizens a little bit. So one of the good things about the virus and like the last year has been it's kind of forced us to kind of live more locally and kind of get to know, our local environment a little bit better, whether it's you're out for a stroll or using your local corner shop a little bit more or your local little row of shops, which I hope will be one of the things that sticks with us, really.
Well, I see that as the other side of the us and them thing, in that many people are... They're breaking down the barriers of us and them because there are lots of people that are actually going out and looking after other people, you know, whether it's providing them with food, checking they're all right. And I've seen the reverse of the breakdown of community by the build-up of community, of people actually taking time to check up people in their street and look after each other, you know. So I think there is a huge positive in this that hopefully will carry on. And we were talking the other day, weren't we, about the Wirral Wombles.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, all that kind of stuff, to see people are actually caring for the environment. They're actually out there clearing up the mess that other people are happy to leave, you know. Good.
I'll put a link to that. I assume there are other Womble groups around the UK that you can get involved with, but yeah, the Wirral Wombles is quite a buzzing little Facebook community of people that are out on walks anyway, and have kind of it's like people have quite learned to enjoy the process of litter picking. So obviously, yeah, it's you know, people are disappointed that people drop litter, or whether it's deliberately or accidentally.
Do you think that it is that they are the people that are out there doing it are kind of interacting with teams and communities, they're kind of socializing as well as litter picking, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think so. As well. I think there's a proper community vibe to it. And I think from what I've seen, it's quite a satisfying thing to do. I've done a little bit of litter picking, you know, here and there. I'm not like up to the level of some other guys, but I think a lot of people do it. They find it quite satisfying, and like it's made it a bit of a game how much you can collect on your way out. So I'm fascinated by it.
Yes.
But yeah, I guess. What I like about it is as well, and I need to speak to, I might do a podcast about it for Rethink, see if I can get one or two of the people that are doing it most often. I like the fact that it's not, there's so much of life that we kind of outsource and we think of someone else's problem, like, oh, the council should be doing that. Oh, I pay all this council tax. Someone else should be doing all that. Whereas the Wombles, they're taking responsibility for it, and they've kind of understood, maybe not consciously, that it's our responsibility to sort this stuff out. You know, you can't just expect someone else just because they've got a high-vis jacket and their job title is whatever, refuse collection, that they'll do everything for you. You know, you've got to look after your own patch, haven't you?
Yeah, no, I agree. And the more we do that, the more that we look out. Because one of the things I say in the blog is that the two things that I see going on is that some people have contracted and they've gone inwards, and they're only looking after their own little group, you know, which might be their family, it might be their own kind of group of ethnicity or orientation or whatever it is, but it's the us and them. And the reverse of that is I've seen people that have opened up and got out, they've blossomed in the pandemic because they've gone out and been highly motivated to do positive things, whether it's litter picking, delivering food or prescriptions, looking after other people generally.
Yeah.
Just checking people out, you know, making sure that older people that are on their own are okay. You know?
Yeah. How's your relationship with technology? I know you're a gadget freak like me, so you've got iPads coming out of your ears and all over the show, but have you generally felt that technology has been a force for good in the last year or so, or is it kind of doing your head in now?
No, I'm okay with it. I mean, it would be lovely to meet people face-to-face. It would be lovely to sit down with you and actually do a live podcast, you know, in the same space. Working online, because I was doing it anyway, because I do a lot of work around the world, and to do work online is something that I had habituated to before we went into lockdown. So I guess I went from doing maybe 30-40% online to doing virtually 100% online for a long while. I am doing some clinics in occ health departments in factories that are all very clinically correct from a cleansing point of view.
Yeah.
But in the main, I'm running things online. I'm talking to people online, doing all kinds of stuff. And in some ways, it's expanded some of the things I do because I've been asked to do some stuff across the world, doing some mental health stuff in places like China and India. And there's quite a few places they've asked me to have some input. Mm-hmm. And that wouldn't have really happened if we weren't actually out there in the media doing stuff anyway.
Yeah. I think we're going to end up in a place where I've got in the habit of Zooming and doing all sorts online now. And yeah, there are occasions where face-to-face is better, but I think it's become kind of second nature now for me to schedule a Zoom call or just do an old-fashioned phone call. It doesn't always have to be Zoom, does it? And that normally I would have, you know, invited someone in for a meeting in my office, which, I mean, I've still got my office and I'm still paying for it. I am thinking about whether I need it anymore, but that kind of, it's not a huge expense, but I have to wait and see how things pan out. But this is going to be the fascinating part of the next year or so, seeing what sticks and what doesn't, because a lot of our economy is based around people going somewhere else to work for the day, whether it on a train or on a bus or on a bike or in a car, and then spending 8 hours somewhere else where they might buy a sandwich or they might get a magazine or they might goodness knows what to then return home. So a big chunk of that, even if it's only 10%, disappears, which will probably be more. That's going to have a massive knock-on effect, isn't it, for how town centres and cities and retail parks operate.
One of the things that is apparent at the moment is because people haven't been going out to work and stuff and can't go to pubs, is that people's levels of savings have gone right up. So people have got quite a lot of disposable cash now. So there's going to be a whole load of people that are going to want you to spend it, isn't it? So there's going to be a lot of pressure on us to engage in things that relieve us of our cash and get the economy going again.
I know.
But one of the realities is, what do we actually need to do? How many people do need to go into the workplace? And sometimes those needs are psychological and emotional. People need to go in for their own well-being.
Yeah.
And that's kind of fair enough. I get that. But also there are the issues of from your end, certainly, about why do we need to have so much pollution, so much travel? And it is like you see the cars. And I was doing it the other day when I had to go down the motorway, and the amount of cars that have one person in it, doesn't kind of make sense, really.
No, it's not. Yeah. It's not a particularly efficient way of shifting a lot of people around. But I like to see think that what's happened to us in the last year is part of a wider shot across the bow to humanity in terms of, you know, reeling ourselves in a little and living a bit more simply. And, you know, if we don't take the lesson on board, then there'll be a bigger shot across the bow, or maybe a direct hit next time, you know. Who knows?
So how do you see the message from Mother Nature coming into us human beings? What are we being told? What's the message in it all?
I'm not saying that I see it as like some kind of conscious decision by Mother Nature. I mean, pandemics like this happen and have happened all through history because we've ventured into parts of the world that we shouldn't, or that people have mixed in certain ways that they shouldn't have. And then it's kind of spread because of the systems we've set up in terms of transport. And so who knows where this virus came from? I mean, there'll be conspiracies about that in terms of whether it came out of a lab or whether it came from an animal somewhere, that, you know, that someone ate something they shouldn't have and it kind of spread from there. So either way, if it's come from a lab or probably from a forest clearing that we cleared so that more people could live somewhere. Yeah, it's kind of a message from planet Earth that, you shouldn't have gone there. You shouldn't have done that. And you probably should have thought a bit more about how quickly something like this can spread, because it'll happen again, whether it happens 100 years from now or it happens 5-10 years from now. Unless we, I did see a news article this morning on the BBC about, I think there's a bit of a global push coming soon for kind of being a bit more prepared next time, and kind of reacting in a bit more of a sensible way. So that'd be interesting as well.
Yeah, but reacting, I was reading the same thing, reacting as the human race rather than these individual groups.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's interesting when you get into the conspiracy stuff, and I'm not belittling it because, like you, I don't know any more than you do. But when you look at things like polio and smallpox and stuff like that, that have been effectively eradicated by vaccine programs, to me, it does make a lot of sense. I know that there are issues about your immune system and using vaccines and stuff like that, but these are things to me that we're in the process of learning about rather than rejecting. But we'll have to see what happens over time.
We will. Yeah, so I mean, it's going to be fascinating, really. What about you? What are you kind of? What have you missed, and what are you going to be doing this spring, summer? What's going to be high on your list?
One of the things that I didn't realize so much until we got into it all was that one of the way that we relieve our stresses, as in Rhea and I, is by taking breaks, because both of us work quite. Sort of nose to the grindstone with quite difficult issues a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And to be able to take some time out just to look at a different horizon, to smell different things, to be in a different place, whether that is the Cotswolds or Yorkshire or driving across to Italy or, you know, Norfolk, whatever it is, just to go somewhere else, means that for that time you can actually switch off and recuperate. And that's the thing that we haven't been able to do. So we started doing it this year. We've had two breaks since Christmas, and what that actually means is we get our welcome hamper together with a bottle of champagne and everything else, and then we put it in the spare room and we actually move into the spare room for the week. So we've just done that. We just had a staycation in the spare room, and it's amazing. It sounds completely stupid, but it's amazing. We were talking yesterday about how both of us sleep very differently when we're in the staycation room as opposed to our regular bedroom. And we've slept better. And we were talking about how we'd had more vivid dreams and things in the staycation. And then coming back, because we're now back into work mode, so we're back in the regular bedroom. And how the dreams have kind of dried up. They're not all kind of like with it, like they were.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I mean, I was watching Anton Deck or Saturday Night Takeaway with the family, little family tradition now. I think it finishes soon in this season. Good old-fashioned Saturday night fun. I'm watching the adverts in between. Like, I don't really watch much live telly now, so I don't see adverts. Yeah. And you can skip them on YouTube, can't you, quite often. So, yeah, watching the adverts is quite interesting at the moment. It was all the adverts were, a big chunk of them, or for holidays, even though, I've seen this phrase, proper holiday, treat yourself to a proper holiday coming up, you know. So for me, that's like Northumberland. And, you know, I do want to get back at some point, if possible, to the Mediterranean and Italy. I'd love to, man. But this idea that you got to have a proper holiday, you deserve it for a week, you know, a week of like, take time off from life. And that's something we can talk about in a future episode, maybe, because we have done in the past. It's not really sustainable from a mental health point of view to kind of work your ass off for 50 or 48 weeks of the year just to kind of give yourself a week's break where you might just by the fifth